This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
We're joined live in studio by avid hunter Jackson Landers. He's not only teaching a class about hunting, he's writing a book about how you can learn to kill what you eat. Jackson, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, Kyle. It's good to be here.
So let's start first with just sort of a Jackson Landers 101 vis-a-vis, because you've been on the show before, but vis-a-vis, you know, hunting and guns. How did you, were you raised like a little kid?
No,
did your dad take you out hunting?
No, I did not. I mean, much like the intended audience from both my book and my class, I was not raised in this. You know, I grew up in a suburban area in Columbia, Maryland before moving to Free Union here in Albemarle County at the age of 13. And, you know, I didn't grow up doing any of this stuff. It was when around the age of 25. I was bequeathed some firearms, some rifles that belonged to my great-grandfather, and he had died long before I was born. And so I got a hold of these things, and it kind of got me thinking. And a few different things came together at the same time. You know, one, interest in this sort of heritage of hunting that had skipped a few generations, and there was the fact that I was, you know, half broke, and the idea of some, you know, free groceries sort of appealed to me. A lot of different things happened at the same time, and I got into my head that I think ethics belong in the way that I eat. And around that same time, I stopped eating pork for ethical reasons. I just don't approve of the way that the animals are such an intelligent animal is treated in a factory farm. And so I decided I was going to try to hunt and kill a deer of my own. And you know what I found was that it is very difficult for an adult who did not grow up in a hunting family to sort of break into that, because hunting is largely an oral tradition in America.
Yeah. You just get it, just because you wander out in the woods with fatigues and a gun doesn't mean you're going to get yourself
a
deer.
Yeah, and that was kind of how I started out. Exactly. First time I went hunting, you know, I had my great grandfather's Model 94 Winchesters in 32 Winchester Special, and I had my Blaze Orange, and I knew that I'd read the basic hunter safety stuff, but there is so much more to it. You know, it's I think we tend to look down on hunters in America. There's sort of a Hollywood stereotype of these sort of like dumb oafs who wander around half drunk and shoot at everything that moves.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be farther from the truth.
What is the truth?
The truth is, I think that that most hunters in America have, deer hunters in particular, they have a sophisticated understanding of ecology and of natural history. They very carefully study their craft. They're reading the latest scientific research on the behavior of deer. They are concerned about preserving natural habitat for not just for deer, but all the other animals and wildlife that they see in the woods. So I mean, the thing is, they're kind of outside of the rest of the conservation culture. You know, they don't have the Sierra Club bumper sticker, but that doesn't mean they don't care about a lot of the same things.
Yeah, we're talking with avid hunter Jackson Landers, and you are now at work on a book about this whole idea, right?
I am, and because it took me a couple years before I got my first deer. You know, what I had a rude awakening when I first went out and tried hunting. It took me years of reading hundreds of magazine articles, dozens of books, spending I don't even know how many days out in the field observing deer, shooting thousands of rounds with rifles at the range. And it took me so long to do this. And I thought, you know, there are other people who would probably like to learn how to hunt deer, but aren't crazy enough to put the years of work into it that I did. And I thought, if I could boil this down, you know, to something for somebody who, you know, just your typical sort of person who maybe they work at a desk in front of a computer and they sort of like the idea, you know, theoretically speaking, about, you know, ethically about hunting what you kill and honoring the animal and minding their food miles and all that sort of thing. But if there was a way to just present it to them, maybe they'd pick it up. So I started teaching the class and I started writing the book.
Now, tell us before we go any further. Tell me about your first deer.
My first deer.
Yeah, do you remember?
I do, actually. The first deer that I killed, it was kind of a strangely almost magical experience. At the time, one of my dogs was suffering from he had a couple of herniated discs in his neck. And so because of this injury to his spine, he was completely paralyzed from the neck down. And everyone was telling me, you got to put this dog down. And I was having to pick him up and carry him outside, you know, several times a day to go.
Yeah.
And I had been nursing him for a long time. And people were saying, you got to put the dog down. I didn't have the money to have surgery on him. And the day I got my first deer, I got home from work a little bit early. And I went out back and waited where in a place I'd seen deer. And all of a sudden, I just had a sense. I felt like it was like a little voice in my head saying, stand up. And it didn't make any sense. I was looking sort of down a hillside where I couldn't see something that was maybe 5 to 7 yards away from me. I could see things that are farther away. So I stood up, which is the worst thing I could possibly have done, right? Because I'm exposing myself. I'm moving around, you know, exposing myself to deer that might come by. And there was a deer. It just stopped. It was just standing there, staring right at me. It didn't make any sense. I aimed very carefully, and I shot. And the deer fell. And on dissection, when I was butchering, I found it dropped like a ton of bricks because I shot it directly through the spine, which is good because it just shut off the central nervous system. But the point is, I came back to the house, and my dog Simon was not where I left him. It was into the bathroom. He realized that's what he always did before when he could walk. When he heard the sound of thunder, a loud noise, he would get up and run into the bathroom. At the moment of the shot, at the moment that I shot that deer. My dog was miraculous. I shot a deer through the spine, and my dog's spinal injury was miraculously healed. And that day, he walked outside and followed me, and it was a long, slow recovery. But it was just a sort of miraculous confluence of events. So it was probably about as wonderful a first deer experience as you could imagine. And as I nursed him back to health, I fed him on venison.
Wow. We're talking with Jackson Landers live in studio. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now. It's 16 minutes until 5 o'clock. Jackson, for folks who don't know the word locavore, mm-hmm. tell us what this word is, because if you haven't heard this word, you're going to start hearing this word a lot. Tell us what it means and what it has to do with this whole idea of hunting.
A locavore is someone who makes a deliberate effort to eat food that was produced locally, and there are a lot of reasons why people seek to do that. The word was just invented a few years ago. I think it was in 2007 or 2008. It was added to the Oxford English Dictionary. So it's a new word, but people become locavores or try to introduce locavore concepts into their lives because it certainly it helps the local economy. It helps to encourage farming and in small scale industry in their own area. But for people who are concerned about burning up petroleum or putting carbon dioxide into the air, all of the things that are environmental problems with shipping food from maybe halfway around the world, becoming a locavore and mining what they call food miles, it sort of helps to offset that. So food miles would be the concept of how many miles did the food travel to get to you. And then, but for example, if you want to eat a steak, well, it's not just how far did they ship the meat from the butcher shop. Well, how far do they ship it from the field the cow was raised on to the feedlot it was finished on, and then the corn that it was probably fed on? Well, how many miles did the corn have to be shipped to get to it? How much petroleum was shipped from the Persian Gulf, in order to produce the fertilizer that you know allows the corn to be grown, and so on? And it gets pretty ridiculous. So if you're concerned about the environmental impact of eating meat, which a lot of people are, you know, if you want to pursue some locavore value in your own life, hunting for deer, you know, you can literally measure your food miles by looking at your odometer.
And the hunting, going out, and specifically we're talking about deer, but mm-hmm. going out and learning to hunt and butcher and prepare your own
field dress and then butcher
prepare your own meat is really makes you takes locavore to a whole new level.
It does. I mean, it's one thing, you know, you're gonna buy, you know, the bottle of shampoo with a little green leaf on it or something. You know, there are a lot of things people can do kind of passively to feel like they're doing something, but this is really putting your money where your mouth is. Definitely.
Yeah. What is the biggest things to overcome? Because I know you've introduced hunting to a lot of people who didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. What are the biggest things that you've seen from your experience that need to be overcome for somebody who is interested? Now, there are people out there who aren't interested at all. I'm not going to go kill an animal.
Sure.
I'll go buy the meat at the Kroger, but I'm not going to go out into a field.
And this isn't for everyone, so absolutely.
Yeah, but there are people who are interested, but like you say, they don't have that tradition. Now, I had guns in the family, mm-hmm. but I didn't have hunting in the family. If you don't have that family tradition, you need to find somebody like a Jackson Landers who can, mm-hmm. you know, take you by the hand and show you what to do. What are the biggest impediments?
You know, the single biggest hurdle, I think, emotionally, which is where it comes down to, because all these other things, these are skills that are very, you know, you just go through the steps and you learn how to shoot a rifle, you learn the ecology and so forth. But emotionally, the biggest hurdle for people, I think, is okay, the deer is dead, you have this dead animal, and there you are, and it's still warm, and you've got to turn this into food. The idea of cutting it open, I think the moment where they have to cut this thing open.
Which people did, of course, for hundreds of thousands of years.
Exactly,
all
yeah.
of a sudden, we
exactly. don't know you how to get away it. From it. If you don't grow up doing it, it's kind of horrifying. Yeah. In my case, it helped that I grew up at least doing some fishing, so I'd gutted, I'd gutted fish, and that gave yeah. me some kind of context for it. But I think that is such an intimidating thing, that moment. And to sit there alone with the knife in your hand and think, I've got this rather enormous, grotesque task where I'm going to look like an extra from Saw or something midway through this, it can be pretty terrifying. Because that's what I did, when I learned how, when I field dressed my first year, I had a little piece of paper, I'd printed out instructions off the internet, fold it in my pocket, and it was spattered with blood, and I kept pulling it out. And there's got to be a better way than this. It took me a long time. I muddled through it, and I got it done. But I think that is the hardest step for people. And that's one of the things that I taught in the class. We had a field dressing demonstration. And before that, I had already taught anatomy, so people knew what they were looking at. And I think it helps in a group session with other people from the class, for support, and they know what they're going to go in there and see. I think it helped a lot. And, none of the people in my last field dressing demonstration, nobody choked. Nobody, just couldn't do it. Everybody got in there and did it. And afterwards, I think they all said they feel pretty good about it. They didn't know how it was going to work out, but they all walked away saying, okay, I can go out and do this by myself. That's the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. We're talking with Hunter Jackson Landers. He's at work on a book about how you can learn to hunt and kill what you eat right here in Central Virginia. And this is a book about deer specifically, but there's other options out there.
There are, but I think for the locavore hunter, and that's really who I'm aiming the book at, for someone who's coming to hunting because for entirely pragmatical reasons, as opposed to just wanting to be out in the woods and liking the idea of the whole thing, deer, pardon the expression, represent the most bang for your buck. I have hunted squirrels and small game and things like that, but in terms of the time you put into it and the money spent on equipments and what you have to learn and so forth, the amount of meat you get from a day hunting.
You
squirrels.
Can stock your freezer with that with one deer.
Yeah, yeah. The squirrels pale in comparison. Yeah, with a deer, you get one, even smallish deer, you're probably looking at 40, maybe as much as 50 pounds of meat, properly butchered, and that is a lot of food. My family, I have a family of four, as long as we have venison around, we don't buy meat at the grocery store. We try to feed ourselves completely in terms of animal protein at home off of venison that we've killed. But one deer lasts us about a month. So you talk about, a month worth of, the protein share of your groceries, that really makes an impact on your budget. You look at, how much would it cost to buy that much beef at the grocery store? If you average cuts, ground meat, steaks, roasts, and so on, say $7. If you're looking at a 40-pound deer, 40 pounds worth of meat from the deer after all the stuff that you discard, it's about $280, right? In Virginia, you can take 6 deer on a basic license. It's not hard.
In a season.
In one season, yeah. And so we have way more deer than we know what to do with in Virginia. So economically, you can pay for your equipment in the first year if you spend the time in the field. It's not hard to harvest over $1,000 worth of venison. You put it in the freezer, and there you are. You can't do that with squirrels. So that's why I'm focusing on deer. For someone who's hunting for pragmatical reasons, they want to really impact the way that they shop for food even. Deer do it like nothing else.
Yeah. How do you describe the taste? Because I've never really been – it's a little too gamey for me. I've never really been crazy about
it. Yeah. As far as gamey is concerned, I think that's – I don't want to say a myth, but the gamey flavor that's described in venison, I think, is a result of the way that it's typically butchered and aged and harvested. You're talking about an oral tradition of hunting in America and dressing out game that goes back to before there was refrigeration. There are a lot of people who think that you've got to hang a deer up in the garage or outside for a week before. A lot of us have probably heard this or driven around the countryside and seen that. You can't control what the temperature is going to be. If it goes below freezing, you're not getting any benefit from an aging process chemically. If it, you got temperatures up in the high 40s or in the 50s, the meat's going to spoil a little bit. Or if it's all about promptly cleaning the deer, getting it gutted, getting it cooled down, and put it in the refrigerator. If you handle it properly, then it just tastes like very lean beef. On the other hand, if you took a cow and treated it like the way that so many hunters out of ignorance treat their wild meat, that would taste gamey too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts? I just driving around lately, just the past few weeks, I have probably seen a dozen deer on the side of the road. I don't know what's going on about
I
this
see
time
more than
of
that,
year.
But I see with a hunter's eyes. Yeah. Right now,
they're everywhere.
It's the pre-rut. You know, started in September and working up to sort of a peak in mid-November. You have a pre-rut behavior where the deer are really very social animals. But you know the way that the resources are distributed, you can't have say a herd of 50 deer in one place. They eat themselves out of house and home, so they have to disperse. And so they're social animals, but only part of the year when there are these excesses of food. You know, come harvest time, we have acorns dropping. You maybe have, you know, fields that are ready to harvest. They're concentrated food sources, so they can start to gather, and they get to know each other and sort of figure out what the pecking order is going to be for the next year. And the fawns of that spring come out to meet everyone. So that's what's been going on. And then that sort of segues into the rut, which is the mating season for deer, where they just go crazy. And, you know, if a buck gets the scent of a doe in estrus, he's just going to make a beeline for it. And, you know, they do all kinds of silly things, running across roads and so forth. And the other thing
is, I have seen a lot of bucks actually on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You know, with racks.
That's right. And another thing that starts to happen that'll continue for a while is you have what's called a dispersal. Between 6 and 18 months of age, a male buck will get chased off at some point during that time, will get chased off by its mother out of the natal territory and has to find its own territory. So they're just running around. They have no idea, you know, where they're going or what's going on. They're running through unfamiliar areas. You know, they're crossing roads they didn't know were there. So that's another thing that's going on. So yeah, this is definitely a month to drive carefully in the country.
There was a 4 or 6 point buck hit by a truck just the other day on 29, right in front of the Toys R Us. I saw it under the wheel of a truck. The truck was stopped. Traffic was stopped. There were cops out there.
Yeah.
Huge deer under the wheel of this truck on 29.
Yeah, well, did you hear what happened in the National Zoo over the weekend? There was what looked like to me in the video like a doe fawn that ran into Washington, D.C. and ended up in the National Zoo and made its way. Of all places, it decided to jump into the lion enclosure. There's great footage on YouTube of that.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, before we let you go, we had a caller who called in and wanted to know, called in off the air and wanted to know, talk a little bit about hunters and getting too close to homes. And I've been in that situation before when I was renting a house down in North Garden. There were some hunters who got a little too close for my taste, but I guess that...
Well, here's one way. I mean, there are laws that the hunters have all taken state-required safety classes for that. But look at it this way. They're not pointing... As long as they're not pointing the rifle at the house, think of it this way. You just mentioned Route 29. A lot of stretches on 29, there are sidewalks, right? There are people who walk up and down 29. You've got cars whooshing by. It's, what, 60 miles an hour? What, 3-4 feet away from someone pushing a stroller? What if somebody turned their wheel just a few degrees the wrong way? It would be disastrous. Or driving past houses along the highway at 60, 70 miles an hour all day long. Isn't that insane? You've got this, you know, thing weighing, you know, potentially several tons that could kill in an instant if somebody just put the wheel the wrong way. Well, same thing with hunters. Oh, if he pointed the rifle in the wrong direction, right, he's not going to point the rifle at the house and pull the trigger any more than the person driving past the baby stroller on 29 is just going to crash into the people. The risk is similar. And it's just, in certain things in our society, we just have to trust that human beings aren't usually completely crazy.
Yeah. Now, give us, how can folks reach you if they want to take your class or get more information?
I can be emailed at jack.landers, L-A-N-D-E-R-S, jack.landers@gmail.com. Someone can shoot me an email, and I'm certainly glad to point anyone in the right direction who's trying to become a locavore hunter.
There you go. jack.landers@gmail.com. Jackson, thanks for coming in, and we'll get you back on when the book comes out.
Sounds good. And any interest in publishers, you've got that email address too.
There you go. jack.landers@gmail.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.